Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's Fourth Branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Regulatory Transparency Project's Explainer podcast series. We're excited to be joined today by a longtime guest, Jennifer Halston, and in addition, a colleague of hers, or a friend of hers, Ian Adams. Ian is the Vice President of Policy at Tech Freedom, and of course, Jennifer Halston is a research fellow at Mercatus. And I'm actually going to take a little lesson that I learned from last week's guest host, Ash, when she had each guest talk a little bit about what they do. So, Ian, could you explain a little bit about what your role is at Tech Freedom before we get into today's subject?
Yeah, I'm absolutely. And I should say that it's great to have colleagues like Ash who are forward-thinking and smarter than I am. So, it's good that we're following her lead here. So, as the Vice President of Policy, a lot of what I do is coordinate the institution's policy platform and then help identify topics to write on, when to write on them, and then how to go about promoting that research subsequently to policymakers.
Excellent. And Jennifer, how would you describe your work?
So at the Mercatus Center, we're really interested in building a bridge between academic ideas and real-world policy. Most of my research focuses on the intersection of law and technology, which are a lot of issues related to data privacy these days, like we'll be talking about today. And that can be everything from researching and writing academic papers to providing educational information to students or policymakers or engaging in the media with regards to my work on things like today.
Great. Well, as you noted, we're going to be talking about some data privacy issues today. And my understanding is you both have a new paper out on the subject. Jennifer, why don't you tell us a little bit about that paper and sort of the subjects that it covers?
Great. Well, as we were looking at kind of what's going on in the data privacy debate, there's been a lot of focus on a potential federal framework. And that certainly is a big area of debate. But at the same time, we've seen some states try and act in what they perceived as a void, where they saw or thought that there really isn't federal policy on this issue and that states are able to be quicker and potentially be leaders via kind of the laboratories of democracy. What Ian and I started discussing a couple of months ago and was taking a step back and looking at initial questions of, is this a constitutional place for states to act? When we consider the federalism system in America, does this meet those initial requirements where states can act and you can have, you know, different opinions on and different points of view and different policies? Or is this really a national issue? And in our paper, we make the argument that this really does have to be a national level issue because of the very nature of the internet.
Ian, tell us a little bit about what these types of issues mean for the average person, sort of what the concerns are.
Well, I think at the moment, there's something called a techlash going on. And so you have a lot of politicians, regardless of their ideological orientation or party affiliation, that are increasingly skeptical of a lot of the tools that have made contemporary society so darn convenient because they didn't quite grapple with some of the trade-offs involved, right? For Google to be effective in offering you a lot of these services, they need to be providing you with ads that are effective at getting you to look at products that you might otherwise be interested in. So people are now becoming aware of some of the trade-offs. Part of that has had to do with the impact of social media platforms on elections, some high-profile data breaches. There have been high-profile instances where society is really thinking again that it's not just a panacea, it's not all good. There really are some hard things we have to think about here. And so that has led policymakers to want to do something, right? I was a staffer for years in Oregon and in California in the state legislatures there. And I remember members would come in with a newspaper and some latest calamity on the front page, and they go, we need a bill. And of course, that's a terrible way to make policy, and that's exactly what we've seen here with data privacy. You've got state lawmakers who are really going out of their way to address constituents' concerns, but of course, they're not necessarily the best positioned to address those issues, given that this is a national level problem.
And when it comes to data privacy, I think it's important to take a step back and realize the wide range of preferences that people have, and also that different individuals tend to make different choices. There are some people that are incredibly privacy sensitive, and they're willing to forego the convenience of certain devices if it means that they can maintain what they feel is more control over their privacy.
Or even pay
or
for
even
a
pay
lot of these
for
services.
It in some services.
Yeah.
Cases. In other cases, though, there are people who are more than willing to give up their privacy, more than willing to give up what some of us would consider very detailed personal information about them in exchange for a service or in exchange for monetary payment. And then for a lot of us, we're in the middle, and it may depend on the particular service, the particular company, the particular type of information. And we're making those trade-offs and choices all the time, even if we're not 100% aware that we're making a choice in that moment.
And that's where you hear a lot of policymakers talk about empowering consumers, but baked into these laws that they're proposing are those assumptions. And they are, they're constraining consumers ultimately on a go-forward basis. And that, at least that's what we've seen in the states that have approached these issues already.
Certainly. And you mentioned some states have already passed some legislation on this. What are some notable examples of these states that are maybe... legislating by calamity issue.
California, of course, has the California Consumer Privacy Act, CCPA. That is a big one that passed last year. Its process of coming to fruition was interesting. California has an initiative process. You had a wealthy individual who essentially threatened the legislature, said, "I will place something on the ballot. It's going to be really onerous." And the legislature swooped in, said, "That's okay, we'll pass a bill instead, because then we can at least get some stakeholder input." It passed in 2 weeks, right? This law that is going to fundamentally transform huge chunks of California's economy and potentially other states' economies. Passed in 2 weeks, and then there was a subsequent legislative session where there were supposed to be tweaks to make it a little more workable. That come January law, 1 will be the law of the land in California, and companies will be expected to comply with the CCPA prior to relevant terms within the law being defined by the Attorney General's regulations. So it's a really kind of convoluted mess out there. Set aside the substance, which is problematic. The process here has been just, it's going to put businesses in a really challenging situation.
By the California's own estimates, the cost of this law on in-state businesses is roughly 1.8% of the state's GDP. So we're not talking about something that's just going to be a matter of flipping a switch. We're talking about something that's going to be quite a number of businesses having to engage in quite costly compliance efforts to do this. Even for those companies who may have already complied with Europe's new data privacy law, the GDPR, the General Data Protection Rule, you also have this kind of patchwork forming because California is not the only state that has done something. Nevada has a law that's very similar to the CCPA, while Maine has a completely different law that is targeting internet service providers rather than more data and consumers in general. And I think that's another good point when it comes to some of these state laws is a lot of times the conversation about data privacy is just seen as a conversation about big tech companies and the tech lash and the Googles and Facebooks. But particularly with California's law and the way it's designed, it has the potential to impact a lot of offline businesses as well. So I know one notable example was there's a great deal of debate around grocery store loyalty programs. So when you go to the grocery store in a lot of places, you have a card that is linked to your phone number, and then you get certain discounts, and you may even get personalized discounts based off of what you're buying in the grocery store. And California's law would make those same grocery stores subject to a lot of data requirements as your online providers as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, right? Because California sets up categories of personally identifiable information, which are then held to really onerous requirements, and also in some cases to requirements to respond to consumers' requests for that information, to opt out of the collection of that information, all kinds of things that is going to leave a lot of businesses unable to actually respond to those requests. And then by virtue of that, put them in a situation where they're susceptible to serious regulatory fines.
And it sounds like because of the nature of the internet, the nature of the use of internet-based services, there's some question about whether what effect this will have on the rest of the country, correct? Because if you've got a business that's operating, let's say, in another state, let's go to the other side of the country in Florida, but they're either collecting the data of someone in California or, a California-based company is collecting data on a Floridian, there would be some regulatory issues there if I'm reading you guys correctly.
Well, absolutely. And this just gets down to the baseline of the operation of the internet and the fact that data flows tend not to respect borders, certainly not within the country. I mean, China has their own system. They've created a great wall. We are not seeking to replicate that sort of a scenario, but we might be backing our way into something that is not totally unlike it when we have these states set up bespoke systems, which is a real problem. So to your example, where someone sits in Florida and isn't interacting with a California consumer, there's a not insignificant chance that there are going to be pecuniary effects on Florida firms and Florida residents as a result of California law.
And that, of course, raises some interesting constitutional questions, particularly under the Dormant Commerce Clause. While the state of California probably assumes that there are benefits, and there are certainly individuals who value their privacy highly, who would say these type of laws are beneficial in a way that's not quantifiable, the cost to out-of-state businesses that will be subject to these laws is quite significant. So when you look at existing precedent, when you look at something like Navajo trucking, where it was found that that requiring truckers to change their mud flaps at the state borders were an overly burdensome requirement, you can only imagine if it's too much to ask a trucker to stop a truck at a state border. Data that naturally almost always involves people in multiple locations that is basically incapable of stopping at state borders certainly at least triggers similar questions about whether or not this is a state unduly impacting interstate commerce beyond its borders.
If my recollections of con law class serve me well here, as I recall, there was some discussion in that case that even though at the time, there was only one state that had regulated mud flaps. Part of the argument was, this is all fine and well until, two, three, four, five states start putting in regulations on this particular item. And before you know it, every time you stop at any border, you've got to change it out. Is there some concern that this might happen in a similar way? You mentioned Nevada has also passed a law on this. I'm sure there's probably other states that are looking at this issue at a state level. Is there a possibility, or maybe there's even already an instance, of where it would be impossible for a firm to adhere by the laws of two different states? So effectively, like you mentioned, they might have to be some sort of parallel service, right? Like a Facebook California version and a Facebook Nevada
right.
version. Is that sort of where we might be headed if these types of conflicts aren't resolved?
I think there's a not insignificant risk of that, particularly for smaller firms, and that's why this is so problematic. In one of the most innovative parts of our economy, we're going to be creating regulatory barriers between states. It doesn't make a lot of sense because these are the leaders of innovation that are then affecting all of the other parts of the economy. You could have inconsistent requirements between the states, and that's just an impossible scenario even for the most sophisticated companies to deal with. And then I think that there will probably have to be some litigation to sort something like that out. But in practice, the approach that firms are taking is they're just going to the most onerous standard, which is currently California's. Microsoft, for instance, has publicly said, we are going to impose CCPA everywhere for purposes of our service. Now, of course, when they say that, they're saying, we're going to give you these rights everywhere around the country. But in effect, I mean, it's just it limits a lot of what people have access to. It limits their options when it comes to their own preferences about their privacy.
And I think it's also important to point out, even if all these laws were identical in their wording, when we're dealing with something like data, there's a lot of interpretation that has to go on in these different terms. And in fact, one of the concerns for companies that are trying to get ready to comply with these laws is that we don't have all the guidelines yet on what some of these terms are going to mean and what the enforcement's going to look like. But even if, to use your example, California and Florida pass identical laws, those laws are then interpreted and enforced by those states' attorney generals. And let me say that again, attorneys general. And so it's quite likely that two different states' attorneys general would have different understandings of what a term like personal information meant. And in some cases, that'll be clearly laid out in these laws. In other cases, there will be room for interpretation, which means that it'll be difficult to have uniform enforcement if it's done at a state level. Again, raising those questions of, if you're a small business and you're trying to offer the same product in every state, it can certainly make it difficult when you have two different letters from the attorneys general that one says it is a violation and one says it isn't.
Right. Well, and I mean, Jennifer, you do a lot on informal guidance, right? And so the tyranny actually could become that much worse by virtue of the fact that this is there's soft law in this interpretive guidance that has very real consequences in terms of enforcement actions.
So it sounds like there's a lot of confusion still. A lot of these regs haven't been fully fleshed out. But Ian, could you tell, and then Jennifer, could you tell us a little bit about, like, what does this mean for a company as far as, like, let's say, you know, there's no nefarious intent. They're just trying to do the absolute best that they can. But with the sort of vagueness that's right now in some of these state laws or these state regs, sort of what are the on-the-ground issues that these companies are dealing with, and what could that mean for an average consumer, for an individual consumer?
Well, it's a really challenging situation for a lot of these companies to be in, and we'll dive back into California just because that's the example that is going to be impacting our lives soonest. So the CCPA has a requirement that a company must respond to verifiable requests for personal information. They, you know, if you as a consumer, a Californian, go to Amazon or a covered company and ask for information about yourself, they need to provide it to you. The challenge, of course, is in identifying the individual and verifying that you are the appropriate person making the ask. And then if you're that company, you technically, under the law, have some flexibility if you have a low degree of confidence about who is asking. But in practice, of course, without these regulations being finalized, you are in a huge degree of legal vulnerability, or you're experiencing a huge degree of legal vulnerability, because either you're not producing information that these people have a right to, or you're giving personal sensitive information to the wrong person. Either scenario is a disaster for business. And while the big businesses can probably sustain some of this or set up methodologies and systems for working through these requests, smaller firms are really going to struggle.
Well, and I think what's interesting there is the incentive on the company then of, yes, there is this verifiable element, but oftentimes, given the quick turnaround that it actually would take to get all that data together and to an individual, out of concern of what these fines could be, the incentive on the company is to kind of go ahead and send it. And looking at what's happened in Europe, where GDPR has been into effect for a year now, there have definitely been some interesting incidents of that. And not just from small little startups, but from large companies that are dealing with huge volumes of data requests and very quick turnarounds as well. There's a very interesting white paper out there now about a man who was able to get most of his, or get a significant amount of his fiance's data from various companies, including dating companies. And so you can certainly imagine that for individuals out there who are very concerned about privacy, while this law is intended at improving privacy, there are some questions of, does it actually improve privacy, and what does it do to data security?
You're absolutely right. And to go further into the weeds in CCPA along that line, CCPA does not make it all that clear how household data should be handled in terms of access requests. So we have smart televisions, and this is a household item, not a personal item. It's collecting data about all of the users on there. And so when you're treating the household as a unit, say you've had a spouse estranged, and now you have access to data that is nominally or in some real sense related to you for purposes of this law, but you're actually trying to seek data about your estranged spouse. And that's going to lead to really, really messy domestic scenarios.
Not only that, there's also the question when it comes to these regulations of what are they doing in terms of the information that has to be collected? In some cases, say you set an age requirement, you're now having to collect birthdays to make sure that that age requirement is being enforced. To certain other identifiable information, be it on a household or on an individual, you may actually be setting yourself up for more data collection rather than less, because companies have to be able to respond in the event
of a request. They have to be more certain that they're dealing with the right person and that the person's the right age and everything.
Precisely. Wow. And just remember, anytime you get this wrong, it's going to be costing you $2,500 per violation. And that is if you don't have what the state deems to be some nefarious intent associated with your action. So it gets really expensive really quickly.
Wow. So this could easily put even a medium-sized firm out of business with a small violation repeated for a month, a week, if depending on how many users they've got.
And that's not even counting the fact that some of these laws include private rights of action. So it gets even more expensive potentially.
Certainly. So, you know, we're recording this last week before Christmas here in December. What do you, Ian? I'll throw this to you first. What do you see as the future for this issue in the near term? Say the next 12 months. What does 2020 hold? Is there litigation that's moving up the judiciary, or is it more of a legislative question at this point?
So I think that we're going to see movement in three different areas. And so at the federal level, it remains the case that Democrats and Republicans from both chambers are very interested in addressing this issue. And in part, it's because they see a conflict coming at the state level that they want to avoid. They'll talk about granting consumers rights nationally, creating uniformity. But at the end of the day, if you are the Democrats and you like what California has done, you want to create a federal baseline of privacy legislation that looks a lot like CCPA. And in fact, you know, when we saw Senator Cantwell's proposal, it looked a lot like that. Other members, Republicans and Democrats, take different approaches, but they all recognize that there's a real burden potentially here. So I think you'll continue to see work in that area. I think you're going to see the Federal Trade Commission, which could also be titled the Federal Technology Commission, for the role that they have played in enforcing privacy standards. They're going to get more and more active in this space with enforcement actions and convening workshops, because they, under their Section 5 authority right now, can do a lot of stuff at the federal level. It's just that particular causes of action and identified harms, privacy harms that we're trying to protect against, they're not spelled out in statute. So it's still a little squishy there. That's one thing. That's at the federal level. At the state level, there are legislators all over the country that are going to be introducing bills and are going to be wanting to run bills, and a number of those are going to get passed. And I think it doesn't matter whether it's a red or a blue state. I think you're going to see serious proposals entertained in both places. I mean, you had a serious proposal in Texas just last session. But finally, on the litigation front at the state level, CCPA comes into effect January 1. Enforcement begins in the summer, June 1. July 1. And so that is going to create the first opportunity for concrete challenges to be lodged on a procedural basis. And then, of course, substantively, that will be fascinating to see how that shakes out, because this is, you know, what is it? What is California? One fifth of the nation's economy, some tremendous percentage of the nation's economy. So it affects everyone.
And I think on that note, with the potential effects, you are going to see some changes to even consumers that are not in California, to the options you have, to products being available. I mean, we saw this when the European law GDPR came into effect. I'm sure everyone has experienced an increase in the number of cookies pop-ups that are at least somewhat related to that law. You'll start to see a lot of updates to terms of service, just clarifying what consumer rights are, as companies have to deal with what could be a very short on-ramp to being prepared for this state law and for subsequent state laws as well. Like Ian, I think you'll continue to see a lot of discussion in Congress. What happens next? We've seen several new bills just at the end of the year here. One from Senator Wicker. He already mentioned Senator Cantwell's, and then there was a new proposal in the House today, actually. So I think you'll continue to see kind of some discussion around what a federal framework would or should look like. In the meantime, I think the question will be how states react as they start to see other states come on board and what happens in kind of that interim period.
Did I not ask anything I should have asked?
No, I mean, I think you covered all the high points here. It's a really fluid area. You're going to see a ton more action in the next year, and I would just say we probably need to reconvene at some point in 2020 to reassess this issue, just because the landscape will probably have entirely changed.
Absolutely. I think it'll be really interesting to see if we had the same podcast a year from now. How many of our predictions on what might happen will have come true, and what, you know, will happen next as a result of that. The only thing I would point out as well is Ian and I, we certainly spent a lot of time today talking about the Dormant Commerce Clause. I think for our listeners, that's probably the most relevant issue when we're really looking at these state laws. But there are other potential constitutional questions, either if a federal framework is established with regards to preemption, and even given existing federal privacy law, I think that oftentimes is portrayed as a Wild West. But when you look at particularly regulated industries like the finance industry, there are already existing laws that govern certain types of data and certain types of information. And then as well as, you know, we talked about trade-offs. Another trade-off that always becomes relevant in the privacy space is free expression. Of, you know, data a lot of times involves an individual speech. And so it's certainly something that when you're looking at potential regulations has to be very carefully considered in light of that.
Yeah, there's a not insignificant chance that the CCPA includes some content-based restrictions that will be challenged.
Wow. Well, I look forward to having you both back on to discuss predictions and other constitutional challenges. So we'll just go ahead and book it in the calendar for December 19th, 2020.
Perfect.
To have you guys back in here if we don't do it before then. But Ian, Jennifer, thank you guys both so much for coming in today and chatting with us about these issues.
Always a pleasure.
On behalf of the Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.